Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten. Mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnen? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto. Das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Namaste, I'm Devina Gupta. And on this edition, in a minute, we will be looking at how extreme heat waves are impacting the global economy. Inflation check for the UK's economy and why the ad industry is opening a new category for humour in its annual awards at Cannes.
And when the world's already in like a bit of a darker place than usual, it's really important to have that comedy that just lifts you up a little bit. And so that's why this new category is extremely important.
All those stories on World Business Report, so stay with us. But first, there's been a wave of intense heat waves in many parts of the world, from India to Southern Europe and also Saudi Arabia, where according to the AFP news agency, at least 550 pilgrims have died during the annual Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca, Hajj. The Saudi government has not released any figures, but several countries have confirmed the deaths because of searing heat of their citizens. Here's BBC's Sally Nabil from Cairo in Egypt.
This season has been very challenging for pilgrims because they have been performing the rituals in scorching heat, and the numbers of the victims are still on the rise. Most of those who lost their lives during the Hajj season come from here, from Egypt, where I am right now. We're talking initially about at least 500 Egyptian pilgrims who died during the season, and most of the deaths so far are heat-related. Saudis say they try to provide as much facilities as they possibly can, like air-conditioned tents. They use special kind of tiles that absorb heat so that the pilgrims can perform the rituals comfortably. But again, and we've heard before about people who lost their lives during the Hajj season, but it was mainly due to specific incidents like stampede, like fire. But we have none of that this year, and it's the first time to see that huge number of people dying, mainly due to high temperature and because they didn't have enough facilities to make them perform the rituals comfortably.
And that high temperature that BBC's Sally Nabil has talked about has crossed 50 degrees in Mecca. One pilgrim who can testify to how hot it has been is Aether Hussain. He's an imam from England who's currently in Mecca.
As you were walking, you could not walk 20 yards except you would see someone struggling in the heat. People were doing whatever they could to shade themselves. They were taking water from kind individuals who were giving it out. They were taking shades in hotel receptions. It was harrowing at times. I've never seen so many people struggle collectively.
And heat wave has become such a dangerous reality in other parts of the world as well. 70 million people in the US alone are under heat alerts this week, with extreme temperatures as high as 41 degrees Celsius in some areas. New York's Mayor Eric Adams issued this heat warning earlier this week.
And we want to be clear, this is extremely hot for June, and New Yorkers should not underestimate the heat. With climate change leading to more frequent and intense heat, summers are different than they were before, and so we should expect and be prepared for the hot weather that is coming.
That's New York's Mayor Christina Hooper, Chief Global Market Strategist at Invesco, is in the New York area, is joining us now. Christina, thanks for being with us on the program. How hot is it where you are, and how are people managing with this heat alert?
Well, it's rather hot. It's about 84 degrees right now, late afternoon, early evening, and humidity level is high. People are going to cooling stations and, of course, going to the beach, finding ways to stay warm, stay cool and stay in the shade as much as possible. But it's difficult because there are some things that are closed today because of the Juneteenth holiday.
And are schools and colleges also taking note of this heat, especially because children are most vulnerable when temperatures notch up?
Absolutely. And some schools don't have air conditioning, some public schools, although for much of the country, school is already out for the summer. So depending upon where you live, children may already be released and enjoying their summer holiday.
But of course, there will also be businesses that will be suffering because of this.
There will. Those who work in office buildings and may have been reluctant to return to work are probably going to be a little more excited about returning, given how hot it's supposed to be in the coming days. But it's definitely difficult for those businesses that do not have air conditioning.
And this temperature is just going to go up. 84 degrees Fahrenheit, what Christina mentioned, is about 29 degrees Celsius. The prediction is that this temperature will go up to 41 degrees in the coming days in New York. Christina, stay with us on the show. So be it the US, India or Saudi Arabia, extreme heat waves are costing precious human lives and on a wider scale, impacting the global economy as well. So we've been looking at that economic cost of the searing heat. Justin Mankin is a professor of climate science at Dartmouth College in the US. His team conducted a study which looks at just that.
There's really very little, a few parts of the economy that aren't touched by the climate system. You know, when you think about certainly agriculture is an obvious one, but there's also impacts on just energy itself and its provision, which is an essential component of the economy. We see here in the United States, where I am, power curtailments and rolling blackouts when temperatures start to get extremely high and people impose peak demand on that grid infrastructure. And that's certainly the case in much of the world. We also have impacts on tourist economies. And I think you're seeing that right now with the Hajj in the Middle East. Thankfully, in future years, owing to the lunar calendar that kind of sets the tempo for when the Hajj occurs, you know, you're going to see the Hajj kind of moving earlier and earlier into the calendar year, which maybe means less risk of encountering an extreme heat wave like the one that's being endured by all those pilgrims right now. There's also a huge influence on infrastructure. I mean, there are parts of South Asia that in heat waves that have been so intense have literally seen roads melt. And so the stress that it imposes on the infrastructure is quite astounding. And then the other obvious ones are what it does to your health sector in terms of creating protracted health costs and burdens associated with comorbidities and mortality associated with heat events, and obviously labor productivity. Any one of your listeners knows how hard it is to get motivated to accomplish anything when it's extremely hot outside. Even if you're inside on that day, it's just there's just a physical taxing quality to extreme heat, and that can actually be documented in economic data in terms of reduced labor productivity.
Your team has been able to figure out the cost of heat waves essentially around the globe. What is it?
Yeah, essentially what we did is, now that we live in a world where global warming has occurred and it's impacted things like the magnitude of extreme heat, we went back and did the exercise of documenting the economic toll that increases in the hottest days of the year have on our economies. Globally, what we find is a really sizable macroeconomic effect, where by about $30 trillion in economic losses we can document over the 1992 to 2013 period attributable to the additional increase in the hottest days of the year from the global warming that has occurred. So this is that $30 trillion number is just that due to the increase from global warming.
Are there certain countries that are more vulnerable than the others?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, one of the key insights of the work is that the marginal effect that an increase in the hottest days of the year has on an economy is a function of how warm that place is to begin with. So you can imagine regions in the tropics that tend to have the warmest temperatures relative to the rest of the globe. Those are the places where marginally an increase in those hottest days of the year have a disproportionate impact on the economy.
And what about economies that are less developed or poor economies? How are they faring with this heat stress and its impact?
Those economies that are primarily agricultural or tend to have a lot of outdoor laborers, these are places where you're seeing really sizable impacts relative to the high income world where, it's really about the service economy. And so I think that's a pretty essential insight. What it tells you is that there are inequities embedded not simply in the causes of global warming, that is, that the global south is least culpable for generating global warming to begin with through their energy use. They are also the ones enduring disproportionately the consequences of global warming. So there's this embedded inequity in both the causes and consequences of warming, and the economic impacts of extreme heat are simply emblematic of that wider story.
Do you think we can recover from this kind of heat wave? Is there a way back, or is it just going to get worse?
People are highly adaptable, and you can see that just given the range of human experience on Earth and the different climates in which we are capable of living. I don't think anything with regards to climate change is fated. Otherwise, I don't know that I could do climate science. The nature of the problem is that it's always worse tomorrow than it is today, and therefore the time to act is always now, not tomorrow. 2023 was the hottest year on record, and nearly 33% of humanity experienced the hottest year locally in the observational record. January through May of this year, so far, given the data, have all been monthly temperature records, exceeding even those temperatures from 2023. And so it's ostensibly a coin flip as to whether or not 2024 becomes the hottest year on record. And so it is absolutely the case that the impacts associated with climate change are here now. And the question is, how do we hold mitigative and adaptive responses to the emergencies it generates, like heat waves, and also pursue mitigation simultaneously?
Professor Justin Mankin from Dartmouth College in New Hampshire in the US. Now, from heat waves to cooling off of inflation here in the UK. Now, inflation has come under 2% target for the first time in 3 years, and much of the price fall is down to global factors. But the UK is now in a better position on inflation than almost every other G7 nation, the Club of Advanced Economies. So prices are rising above 2% in most of the EU countries and at 3.3% in the US. Here's BBC's Ellie Price speaking to people in Surrey in south of England earlier today.
Inflation figures are out today, and they're at a 3-year low. Do you think this is a turning point in the cost of living? Are you feeling better?
I felt better when I just bought those clothes because they're quite cheap. So that is good because 25% off, right? No, I think everything's really expensive. I think everybody's struggling, aren't they? So,
how does it feel for you?
James, how does it feel for you?
Not very good, really.
We work really hard, and it feels like everything. Then we go to everything's so expensive. We
We've
just,
got our mortgages.
yeah, we've got that chucked in as well. There's just not enough. It's just not enough money.
That's BBC's Ellie Price speaking to some shoppers there. Vicky Price is Chief Economics Advisor at the Centre for Economics and Business Research, joining us from London. Vicky, what's your assessment here? We just heard people talking about even though this big rate has come down, but still prices are still expensive. People are feeling that cost of living crisis.
Of course they are, because we've had such a long period now of rising prices and inflation being above normal, if we consider normal to be possibly about 2%, which is the target of most central banks in terms of what they're trying to achieve in a stable fashion. So if you add it all up, if prices were rising by, let's say, 11% as they did in the UK towards the end of 2022, and then they continue to rise after that month after month, even though at a lower rate, then you end up with quite substantial increases over a period of time, including for food, which, interestingly enough, came down in the last month, which is the May data that we just got. So prices actually fell. But nevertheless, if you compare them with just 2 years ago, we're talking about a 25% increase. So yes, people feel that on a daily basis, whenever they go to the shops or order anything at all online or look at the costs of services that have risen very, very significantly.
But this UK inflation at 2% in May, which is year-on-year target, but this comes under the Bank of England's target for the first time in almost 3 years. So do we look at mortgages coming down? Is there a case here to expect any change in the interest rates?
It's a very interesting question because, of course, until now, we were expecting that the May data was going to be pretty good, possibly even below target. A few months ago, we thought this would happen and that therefore interest rates were going to start coming down. And June was always penciled in as the most likely time for the Bank of England to reduce interest rates when it meets. And it meets tomorrow, of course, in the UK. Now it's most unlikely it's going to happen, not because of anything the underlying data is telling you, but because we're having an election. So the general expectation is that given that we have everyone going to the polls on July the 4th, it's probably politically not very wise to cut rates right now. And so it's very unlikely to happen.
So, in fact, some experts have been saying it may be in autumn, but let's get in Christine as well, because let's take a look at what's happening to inflation and interest rates conundrum around the world and other economies. Because, Christine, in Europe, for example, European Central Bank cut its main interest rates from an all-time high just earlier this month. The U.S. seems to be stuck with that question, with their central bank, the Federal Reserve, still keeping it strong.
Absolutely. Different economies are moving in the same direction in the developed world, but they're not moving at the exact same pace. And so that's why we've seen the ECB comfortable cutting this month. But we didn't see the Fed comfortable. And in fact, I think it will take until September for the Fed to cut, but I do believe it will cut. The UK, if you look at CPI, yes, it's great that it got to the BOE's target. But if you look at services inflation, it was higher than expected. It's looking a little stickier than I think most economists would like to see. And I think that will postpone a first rate cut to August.
Well, Vicky, just briefly then, about 30 seconds or so, but how long do you think we can see this dip in inflation? Because wages are rising faster right now than prices.
Well, that's one good thing, of course, because people are finding that they've got a bit more money in their pockets. And though they're being a bit cautious in terms of what they spend, at least they're seeing real wages increase. They are expecting, everyone is expecting interest rates to start coming down. There is no doubt from a month to month, if you look at the comparisons, what may be happening over the next few months, we might see that annual increase go up a little bit. But we are towards having much more stability in terms of the inflation rate than we thought we would have perhaps a little while ago. And I think, therefore, interest rates should be coming down, and not just once, but perhaps two or three times before the end of the year.
All right. So perhaps beginning of the end of the cost of living crisis for many in the UK. But Vicky Price, Chief Economics Advisor at the Centre for Economics and Business Research in London, thank you for joining us. You're listening to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now, when we talk of price rise, one would think those who can spend are already ready to pay for high-end labels, be it bags, shoes, clothes, you name it. So luxury markets should not be feeling the pinch of this. But not anymore. According to the consultancy firm Bain, surging prices of luxury goods have turned off some shoppers. For more, I spoke with senior partner of Bain's, Claudia Terpizio.
There are many brands that are suffering and that are probably in a phase of rethinking of their strategy. So you have some big brands that are under turnaround, changing their value proposition, changing creative director, fine-tuning in their positioning, probably not really catered to the needs of the customer that are now growing. Brands have increased prices, but moreover, they have focused their collection more to serve the top of the pyramid. So they have put their creativity and their efforts in developing very expensive items, higher prices.
How much of this is going to hurt these luxury brands? Because is it possible that this exclusive strategy that they have for high net worth individuals will eventually be able to cover for the loss of middle class consumers, as you say they're seeing?
Yeah, no, I think that this has been an overcorrection. So the strategy has always been what I'm saying, the high-low strategy that I was mentioning. There has been an overcorrection in the last year because many of these brands were not super strong on the high end, and also because the high end customers were more resilient in a turbulent period like the one during COVID and after COVID. So I'm sure that the brands are already thinking how to rebalance their strategy and keeping the path of this high-low strategy.
And many of these luxury brands also depend on consumers from China, for example, from the US. Do you see that there's been a change in consumer sentiments there?
Yeah, so consumer sentiment in China now is quite dichotomic. In particular, even the wealthy customers, so you have the aspirational customers, the middle class, and in particular, the young customers that has been the driver of growth of the market that have very low consumer confidence. You know that this is the first year where you have a big rate of unemployment in the younger generation in China, and this is creating a strong reduction in consumer confidence. At the same time, you have the wealthy customers, that one that have the money and the big patrimonies that are a little bit under attack by the government, and there is a luxury shame going on. So even wealthy customers that can afford and that are buying, they don't want to ostentate wealth. So they are buying more in a subtle way, choosing more subtle luxury, less visible item, less logo. Even in the US, a big polarization of consumption, the wealthy customers, but also the oldest ones are the ones that are more resilient right now.
What's your advice to luxury brands, especially to attract new business and new consumers and younger consumers from different parts of the world?
Keep innovating and to keep putting creativity at the center, to really put creativity at any price point of their collections and their value proposition in order to serve all the different cohorts of customers.
Claudia Del Pizio of Bain's there. Christina, what struck me was this phrase luxury shame, which is happening in China. Is that being impacting the stock market as well of these luxury brands?
Well, it hasn't had a significant impact. I think certainly there's a lot of chatter, a lot of media attention, but a lot of these brands have held up very well and likely will continue, especially since I anticipate an economic reacceleration that should start towards the end of this year, early next year.
Thank you so much for joining us. Christina Hooper there, Chief Global Market Strategist at Invesco there. Now, be it luxury brands or others, advertising has always played a crucial role to sell these products. But as markets around the world get more and more competitive, some brands are banking on humor to attract new customers. And this is being recognized at the Oscars of advertising industry, the Cannes Film Lions Festival in France. The Cannes Lions Festival in France. Organizers say they are looking for examples of wit and satire. Alan Wilson is Group Creative Director at the global agency Bartel Bogle Hegarty, or BBH. They have entered the awards as well with their own entry. I spoke to Alan a short time again in Cannes and asked him why he thought humour was so important.
We do need to put a bit of a spotlight on humour. I think recently there's been a lot of, I guess you could say a lot of the campaigns in advertising worldwide have kind of leaned into the more darker way. And we even nicknamed it sadvertising. It went a little bit sadvertising. And when the world's already in like a bit of a, you know, just a darker place than usual, sometimes you just, rather than just seeing other things that just make, you know, make you feel a little bit sadder, it's really important to have that comedy that just lifts you up a little bit. And so I think that's why this new category is extremely important. And also means that it just kind of like, for the young creators out there or any creators out there, when they do see this category, it'll just probably maybe prompt them to maybe think of just heading some of their campaigns or even their brands in just a more humorous way.
But being funny is a serious business, especially if you're trying to market a product. What kind of challenges do you face as a creator when you're trying to make that ad, and especially one that is globally appealing with humor?
One thing is just knowing your audience, knowing who you're actually talking to. And I think once you do know that, then you can kind of figure out what type of humor you can play in. And I think the other big thing is you need to be authentic. You can't just be funny for the sake of funny. You need a reason to do it. And I think when coming towards that, you just need to make sure that the humor just really nails that kind of those moments that will make your target audience laugh. And the other challenge is you just sometimes don't know if comedy will hit or not. It's like one of those things. And you hear comedians talk about it. Like whenever they're doing one of their specials, they'll practice their whole set weeks upon weeks. And then the jokes they think will kill don't do any good, but the little jokes they put on the sides do well. And that's kind of how they create their specials.
And you're also looking at just a few seconds, if it's a television or a radio message, to deliver that humor to your audience with that product. Are there certain themes that work really well?
Some of the themes that work really well is like the classic rug pull. Like if you think the ad's going in one way and then you can kind of take the rug out of it, then the audience has that aha moment. They're like, oh, and then they laugh. That's like quite important. If you can find a real life insight that's going on in the world and put a mirror to that in a comedic way, that's a really nice way of just kind of targeting the audience too.
Well, I was going through this Kantar research, which has said there's been a decline in the use of humor in advertising in the last 20 years. Why is that?
It's hard to say exactly, but one thing I will say is humor is actually hard to do well. And the other thing is there has been a theme of emotional advertising has really risen recently. And I think that's been the other big trend, is that like with humor going down, emotional advertising has gone up. So that's the other thing as well. But I do miss the days of where you can just put on the television and then every ad break just makes you laugh out loud.
Oh, golden days. Alan Wilson from ad agency BBH. And another story that made me smile is about this Australian island state, Tasmania, has launched a tongue-in-cheek odd jobs initiative to boost tourism. You can choose an all-pay trip to be a wombat walker, paranormal investigator, or stargazer. Think about that. More on that on bbc.com/news. But thank you for joining us on World Business Report. You can find more of us. Just search wherever you get your podcast, World Business Report. See you next time.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
17 members of Zambia's national football squad have been killed in an air crash. The players were on their way to Senegal for a World Cup game.
When disaster struck Zambia's national football team in 1993, many thought that was the end of the country's international football dreams.
These guys had a desire to take us to the World Cup.
The whole country was mourning.
Instead, it was the beginning of one of sport's greatest comeback stories.
We have to go on. We can't give up. We don't give up in Zambia.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents the four-part series, Copper Bullets. Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.